DeRozan, a pretty move in the lane. BJB throws it down. Three doesn't go. Valanciunas in a crowd with a rebound. JV working big, working strong. Pass is ultimately stolen away. Bradley gives it to Harrison, a slam dunk. DeRozan.
That's critical. What a pass.
Oh, what a dish. DeRozan over Boban, and it's good. Here's a drive, and Bradley with the slam. Here's CJ, the open three from Hamilton. The hammer. The three, DeRozan just short. There's Pirtle. Plus the foul.
I think in the last three quarters we fought hard, but the first quarter counts. And there's just not very many times where we play a good defensive first quarter. It's disappointing. You're working out of that hole, and then late in the game, we have a chance, and we're not up on two pick and rolls late, and Lowry and Miles hit back-to-back threes. All we've got to do is be up. I thought in between first quarter and then, we fought really hard, and then when it was winning time, we didn't do our job.
It's been very challenging, just from the simple fact of how many guys have been in and out. You know, this is a difficult, you know, year for our team. It seems like I say that every year, but this one has been much even more challenging. You know, with everybody that's been out and coming back in and the rotations and things of that nature, it's been very challenging on our team. But we have to figure it out. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, we have a game every other day or every 2 days, just like everybody else in the NBA. You know, we have to go out and play.
We see this every year. I know they have issues. I know the issues seem even deeper, that the players are even concerned, hey, we need a little more help here as well. It's just tough for me to say, oh, yeah, this isn't going to be the year when you have LeBron James and when you get to the playoffs that they figure it out.
I think it was petty on Paul Pierce's part. There are going to be all type of announcements that happen in the 48 minutes during that game. All types, including celebrating Isaiah Thomas could be one of them. Does not take away from your situation like Kobe's that happened during the game, because they're doing yours post-game.
In this day and age, everything's going to come under scrutiny. And if you fall short like the Pittsburgh Steelers fell short, people are going to say, hey, what about this guy? It just, to me, it's laughable that a franchise that has been the most stable franchise in all of football, that doesn't change coaches, but rarely, all of a sudden is making a head coach. It's not happening.
I think these things are never reasonable. I think there's sort of like just reactions and angry reactions in the moment after losses, which in this case was like, what, 48 hours or less for those investors who might be upset. And so, no, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. He's won a Super Bowl. He's been to another. The Pittsburgh Steelers community was embarrassed by what happened last. Yeah. That is what they're taking out now on the only person they probably feel they can, yeah. Mike Tomlin.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to Yon Extravaganza. Hope you're having an outstanding Thursday as we roll on at 10 minutes after 3 o'clock. We're going to take you until 5 o'clock, and then a little drive time action will be coming your way. We're going to be basketball heavy today, I can tell you that. As the Pistons keep misfiring. Ooh, did I just do an actual piston word there? I mean, a reference?
A little bit there, yeah.
That actually does.
Nicely done.
I don't normally do that sort of thing. I don't know why. I don't normally do that thing. But the Pistons continue to misfire. A 5-point loss to the Raptors last night, their third straight. They're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th in their last 8 games. They're 7th in their last 9 games. I think that's very Cavalier-esque of them. And that's my segue into the Cavaliers that we're going to talk about as they look to snap their 4-game losing streak. And they have lost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 out of their last 10. And 9 out of their last 12. Or is it 11? It's 12. Yeah, 9 out of their last 12. So a couple of losing basketball teams that we cover a lot right here, because we know there's a lot of fans of those teams in the Northwest Ohio / Southeast Michigan region. And, yeah, things not going great guns for either one of those teams. We're going to talk a little bit about the NBA and particularly the Cavaliers side of things coming up at 3:35 with Mr. Rick Noland, who is Cavaliers beat writer. Then, at 4:40 this afternoon, we are going to talk a little college basketball with the head coach of the Rockets, Todd Kowalczyk. So we're looking forward to both of those conversations, and we certainly welcome your participation if and when you are ready to talk about those things and more. We will be doing that at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. Rockets, by the way, if you're keeping score at home, and you should be, are a rolling. They have won 4 in a row. They are now sitting at 4-1 in the conference. That's best in the West, in the MAC West right now, 12-6 overall. Just one game behind Buffalo in terms of the best overall record in the conference. So That's after, of course, their win against Ohio, which was on when did they play that, Jim Cushman?
Tuesday.
That was Tuesday. Oh, that was, that's right, just 2 days ago.
We're in MAC play, so for
the all the way back to Saturday.
Outside of the couple of random games that might be here or there, pretty much all MAC games now that we're in that part of the schedule are Tuesdays and Saturdays.
Thank you so
much. They like to streamline it.
And they've got Kent State coming up. And
yes, they do.
We're going to talk to Coach Kowalczyk about that. So. Since I said we're going to go basketball heavy today, and we're going to talk about the Cavaliers mess, and it is a mess right now. LeBron James, by the way, is has been quoted as saying that this has been his most difficult season. I find that very interesting. This has been his most difficult season. Remember, when he came in as a rookie, Cavaliers were a wreck. That's why they had the number one overall pick and were able to take him. He had some rough early seasons, but he said this is his most difficult season. Most challenging season. And he offers no excuses for it whatsoever. He just said this is a rough patch. He conceded that they have not played well. The season has been very difficult, and he's not really sure exactly what it's going to take to get out of it, but he is committed to doing that. So I look forward to that part of the conversation coming up with Rick Nolan. But I want to talk. I spent a little bit of time on this yesterday, and I didn't realize that more would happen last night that would need a follow-up on this today. And I'm talking about the Paul Pierce, Jalen Rose situation. Yesterday, we talked about Paul Pierce, and we talked about Rajon Rondo. We talked about Isaiah Thomas and all of the different things that go into this. February 11th, What do they have in the soap opera? Not a fairy tale, a soap opera. It's a soap opera. That has basically become since the Boston Celtics announced that they wanted to retire the jersey of the great Paul Pierce, one of their franchise's best players in their history. I heard somebody bring this up today. Probably not a top 20 guy in NBA history, but certainly a top 100, maybe somewhere near the top 50. I don't know. That's a long list. You really got to look through everything to see where you rank Paul Pierce. But he is one of the great all-time players for the Boston Celtics. There's no question about that. Certainly a top 100 player all-time. And when you think of all the thousands of players who came through the league, that's a hell of a thing. You don't get your name and number hung in the rafters at Boston Garden, even though they don't call it Boston Garden anymore, TD. You don't get that your name hung up there with the likes of Russell and Havlicek and Bird and McHale and on down the line of great players there unless you did something very special in your career. And he did. And so they're going to honor him with that on February 11th. And as by now, I assume you already know most of the story here. And the story is that new Cleveland Cavalier, by way of the Kyrie Irving trade, former Boston Celtic Isaiah Thomas, went back to Boston for his first return trip, not playing because he was injured, on January 3rd. The Celtics offered to do a video tribute just to thank him for his time in Boston. Number one, why? He played 2.5 years there. Not 20, two. 2.5 years there. Those 2.5 years were met with varying degrees of success. Two first-round playoff ousters, and then a trip to the conference finals last year where Isaiah Thomas was injured and couldn't even participate in what was a conference playoff loss. A conference final loss. What exactly are we paying tribute to? You were here for 2.5 years. It was super. It was fun watching you. Good luck to you the rest of the way. We're out. Well, you're out, actually. Why the tribute at all? But they wanted to do it for him on January 3rd. Part two is Isaiah Thomas said, nah. No, don't need to do that on that day. It's not that I don't want one. It's just that I'm not playing that day, and I want to put on a show when you do a tribute for me. And, oh, by the way, you're going to play video up on the scoreboard. My family won't even be there. You really need the family to be there to watch you on TV on the big screen? It's your jersey's not being retired. Isaiah? Jersey's not even, this is just you were here for 2 years plus 21 games, and now you're gone. Here's a tribute from when you were here. Okay, super. He turned it down, saying, no, let's do that next time I come back. Because next time I come back, I'll be playing. Be rehabbed a little bit from my hip injury, and then I can put on a show for the crowd. All right. When's the next time? Well, you know it by now. It's February 11th. Apparently, the Celtics asked Paul Pierce, yo, PP, 34. On the night you get your jersey retired for 20 years or however many, 15 years in Boston as one of our great players of all time, on the night you get your jersey retired, would you mind splitting the spotlight a little bit while we feature Isaiah Thomas, who was here for 2 years plus 21 games, who never got to a finals, lost in the conference finals, didn't really even play in it because he got hurt, first round exits the other two times. You okay with sharing the spotlight? And Paul said, to be honest with you, no. Kind of not the same thing. Kind of thinking I'd like to have that night with the Boston fans by myself, if that's okay. Sure it is, but the problem is it went public. And that's all on the Celtics. That's all on the Celtics. Well, because it went public and because Paul Pierce was consulted when he shouldn't have been, they should have just known this is the wrong thing to do. But because it went public, it opened up the door for all kinds of criticism of Paul Pierce, including criticism from former Michigan great and former NBA star Jalen Rose. Jalen Rose was on TV last night with Paul Pierce on an ESPN Fast Break broadcast, and along with Jackie McMullen and Chris Forsberg, Jalen Rose called Paul Pierce petty for wanting to have his jersey retirement ceremony all to himself. I found that very, very interesting. So it's NBA countdown, not Fast Break, NBA countdown on ESPN that this conversation took place. And I want you to listen to it. I have some very strong opinions about it that I want to share with you, but I want you to listen to the segment for yourself for the sake of context. And then we'll discuss.
I just think when it was originally planned for him, the first time he went to Boston to do a tribute, and then he decided he didn't want to do it. I thought it should have been there. But when they said he wanted to do it the next time, I don't think he knew that that was the retirement night. He just assumed the next time I come to Boston. Once he found out, that's where the conflict was. So, you know, I think it should have been handled differently, you know, not only by Isaiah, myself, and the Celtics. You know, it's things that we could have did better. But at the end of the day, I'm glad we resolved it, and we'll move on.
Isaiah didn't know, but the Boston Celtics knew that was your night.
Right.
I'm trying to figure out, why is there a controversy? I mean, I'm with Rondo, what Rondo said. Like,
Why don't you remind the world of what Rondo said?
What did Rondo say?
Say it with your chest, Matt.
No disrespect for the Isaiah, but I'm just calling the facts. Like, this is a historic, you know, franchise, and one of the most winningest franchise with all the banners up there, title banners, all the Hall of Famers that are up there. This guy's going to be hanging up there in a couple of weeks. Like, we're not celebrating conference titles, and you lost.
Right.
So I don't understand. Like, you wanted your family to be in attendance for you to have a tribute video? I don't get that.
Now that we've heard from two Hall of Fame players.
Oh, you about to take up.
Can we hear from somebody?
Let me pause that for a second there. The voices you're hearing, first was Paul Pierce. The second was Tracy McGrady. So, yes, most definitely two Hall of Famers. And now you're going to hear, and by the way, Tracy McGrady's right. You needed your family to be there for a video tribute? I mean, you can probably get a copy of it. It'll probably be on YouTube. Why? Really? It's a video tribute before a regular season game. What's the big deal? You don't really need to, and you don't need to be playing that night either. You could have just had this before, and now we don't have the controversy. But the Celtics screwed this up in a big way, Tracy McGrady pointed out. Now here comes Jalen to change the conversation. The former Michigan star, going to throw some shade at number 34, Paul Pierce.
Just a guy named Jalen, a veteran.
I'm gonna give Jalen some more play.
Hey, he's back. He want to have seasons there.
So first off, Paul, let me just say, you say he found out. Bottom line, the Boston Celtics handled it wrong. Right. They put his celebration on your day, not him.
Right.
They play in the same conference. They could have found a way to work it out.
Why did they do that? Because he turned down the offer the first time back. That's why.
The Celtics could have been like, we need you to do it now because the next time it's Paul Pierce.
There was no foresight.
That's
nobody
why
looked at
that. That's why
that
I gave them the blame.
That's where it all
That's why
okay,
I gave
so
them
so
the blame.
So far, so good. So far, so good.
That's one. Blame.
Yeah, same page.
Number two, you don't have to win conference titles with a team to be celebrated. What about it's something that you did in the community? What about something that you brought to the team that was really special?
But he didn't. Jalen, he didn't. He was just a dude, just a player. Yeah, he was an all-star last year, had 29 points a game. But that was it. That was the extent of it. He didn't start a foundation. He wasn't being honored for his philanthropic work or his charitable work. He was just a player for two years plus 21 games, like a whole lot of other guys were. And there were no championships or anything else that came along with those 2 years and 21 games. That kind of context matters.
Wait, the Boston Celtics did turn around their fortunes since you played there when Isaiah Thomas was leading them.
Right.
He was a part of them being a number one seed. He had tragedy with the team. He even played in a playoff game after his sister tragically passed away.
Yes, that is all very true. We're giving video tributes now because something sad happened? I'm quite sure something sad happened to Jay Crowder. He was also a major contributor to the team that had the number one seed, did not win the Eastern Conference with that number one seed, but had a regular season that was good enough to be number one seed. Where's Jay Crowder's video tribute? We are giving away participation trophies. Dude played for them really well 1 year, pretty well the other year. Two first-round playoff exits, one conference championship participation trophy, losing. That's not video tribute worthy. Stop it. You're Boston. Stop it. But this is where it gets nasty. Jalen Rose, former Michigan star, former NBA veteran, calling Paul Pierce what?
I just think when it was originally planned for him, the first time...
Hold on a second. Hold on a second. I want to get that where we left off.
Sir tragically passed away. Next. I got to say a word for you, fam. I thought it was petty.
Ooh.
On who?
On Paul Pierce's part.
In what part?
I love Paul. This is my brother.
Part?
Because to me, there are going to be all type of announcements that happen the 48 minutes during that game.
Okay.
All types.
Okay.
Including celebrating Isaiah Thomas could be one of them. What does not take away from your situation like Kobe's that happened during the game because they're doing yours post-game.
It does take away. It does take away. It's number 34's night. It is not anybody else's night. And yes, there are other announcements during the game such as fans, don't forget the Bruins return to action on February 2nd right here at the Garden. Including, hey fans, don't forget you can get your free t-shirt when you cast your vote for all of the Celtics online in the All-Star voting. But not, let's honor one of the great all-times, all right, great long times, well, no, great medium time, no, great short time, well, one of the great players for two seasons and 21 games that we've had. In the last 3 years, he was one of our best players. Isaiah Thomas. No! You don't split the spotlight with a legend. You just don't do that. And yes, it is absolutely the fault of the Boston Celtics for not telling Isaiah, if you want us to do a tribute, you're going to do it when you make your first trip back here. And if you don't want to do it then, we respect that. But that's it. We're not going to do it the second time. That's Paul's night. We're not going to do it the third time because now it gets stupid. So we'd like to say a little thank you for playing for us for 2 years and 21 games. If you don't want it, then you don't want it. And Jalen Rose just called Paul Pierce petty for saying, I'd kind of like to have my jersey retirement night be focused on me, not on some other dude who was here for 2 years. That's not petty. That's real.
Right. But throughout the game, you're going to have different memories from
Absolutely.
The time I spent there. So now you take another 2 years from the memory.
No, you just said that.
And put that and this is the thing. Like,
dude, they go playing tribute videos all night for him.
Can I tell you something about your birthday? It ain't only your birthday. A lot of people's birthday happen that time.
Wow. Yeah, once again, Jalen Rose throwing the shade. You do know that when it's your birthday, it's not only your birthday. This isn't birthdays, Jalen. You sound stupid. You sound flat out stupid, Jalen. And this is coming from a devoted Fab Five fan. I thought the Fab Five was phenomenal. And I still have great memories. And when that 30 for 30 comes on, I watch it. I liked Jalen. I liked Webb. I liked Jimmy King. I liked Ray Jackson. And I liked Juwan Howard. I thought they were one of the most fun stories that I've seen in really ever in my life of watching basketball. fan. But, Jalen, stop it. Everybody in the world has a birthday. Not everybody in the world gets their jersey retired, particularly by the winningest franchise in the history of a given sport, like the Boston Celtics. You don't share that day with other people. It's just that simple. A little more.
No way. And look, a lot of people don't come through and have historic, you know, seasons and careers like him either.
You just said guys come here, they do things off the court, the community, recruit other players, then retire, then do this for everybody. Because it's not the stars that do it.
Right.
Everybody comes in there and has their piece in the community, does their thing, what they're supposed to do for the team. I mean, then you're saying, oh, Gerald Green played for the Celtics, had things going on community. A lot of guys. Let's just go ahead.
Or like I said, Jay Crowder, who was traded to the Cavaliers at the same time that that Isaiah Thomas was. Where's my Drake Jay Crowder tribute night? When does that happen?
Something for them.
But listen, he wasn't a three-time All-Star. Listen, led though, him to a number one seed.
For me, the issue is not the tribute
And they
video.
Made it to the conference finals.
It's not the tribute video.
He was number one seed. How low are we putting that bar now for tributes? Man, I am telling you, this is the dumbing down of competition and success and achievement in America. Everybody gets a freaking ribbon. Well, you know, he led them to the number one seed. Really? Wow. So they were the best team in the conference? They must have gone to the finals, right? Well, no, they lost in the in the conference finals. Well, my boy must have just killed it, though. If they lost, it wasn't because of him. Well, no, he was actually hurt. He only played about a game in the conference final. Oh. Well, the other 2 years he was here, though, he must have made some serious noise in the playoffs. No, they were first-round exits both times before. Why are we giving this man a tribute? Why am I making Paul Pierce fight for the attention he deserves on his night? This isn't right to Paul Pierce. Jalen Rose, you sound stupid.
Yes. Show the video, but don't turn it down because your family is...
I got a question for both of you guys. I got a question for both of you great players. Should Chris Paul have gotten a tribute from the Clippers?
Yes.
Without a doubt. They didn't make it to the conference finals.
It's not about the conference finals.
He took a franchise that didn't have that didn't have no history, and he made them relevant again. Boston Celtics been relevant. You know what I'm saying?
That is a big, big part. That's what Rondo said. This is the Boston Celtics. This isn't a team with no history. This isn't a team that doesn't have anybody to celebrate. This isn't a team that doesn't have any numbers to hang in the rafters. This is the Boston Celtics, man. Look at the names up there. You don't cheapen that accomplishment by sharing the night with another dude.
Yeah, let Woj.
Listen, IT deserves some acknowledgement. I'm not saying
smart organization.
He got some acknowledgement. You know what it was called? A paycheck every Friday. Thanks for playing. That's your job. Go do it. Now you were here for 2 years. We'll see you around.
Those video tributes for almost anyone who spent any amount of time there, because it's a message to a player that if we release you, if we trade you, if you leave us, there's no grudge. That when it's not just family when you're here. When you're gone, we're still going to acknowledge you. And I think organizations who don't do that, they're saying something to a player. That's a different message than they send you when they're trying to get you to be all in. It's just a gracious gesture by an organization. And you see role players. Golden State, anyone who's been with the Warriors the last few years, they leave and come back. They get 45 seconds. Yeah. But
the acknowledgement.
The acknowledgement.
JJ
Redick, Jamal Crawford, they got acknowledgments with the Clippers.
Hey, man, you guys been great players, man.
Look down
at the other 14 guys, Max. Somebody sending picks for you?
Listen, man, I'm not saying he doesn't deserve.
There's the video tribute for the dude who sets picks for JJ Redick to shoot. Such a very important. We are just dumbing down competition. We are disincentivizing achievement. You don't have to become great to be honored. You just have to play. And then make it sound really, really bad if you don't get your honor at the end of the day.
Alex, man, he turned it down that night.
No, because you said you were with what Rondo said, and what Rondo was saying is why is he getting a video in the first place? What'd he do?
Boom.
I'm with Rondo.
Boom.
I think he deserves some acknowledgement.
Sure.
Boom. That was Tracy McGrady, wasn't it? Tracy McGrady, I'm with Rondo. Boom. Sorry, Isaiah Thomas, and I'm just going to tell you point blank, brah. You're with the Cavaliers now, so I'm going to support you and I'm going to root for you. And I think you're a great story as a 5'9" dude making game or having a great game and making it in the NBA. But you're no Kyrie Irving. You're not Kyrie. There's a reason the Cavs are where they are right now. Without Kyrie and with you, it's a different thing. You're not Kyrie Irving, and you don't need a video tribute for 2 years plus 21 games on a franchise that gives tributes to the greatest players who have ever played the game. Let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports.
Yes, indeed, Buffalo Wild Wings, Wild Stat of the Day. Back on Tuesday, number 20 Clemson, talking college basketball, lost at number 15 North Carolina, 87-79. So you're like, so what? What's so wild about that? Well, the loss drops Clemson to 0-59 all time at Chapel Hill. The longest road losing streak at a single opponent in all of Division I college basketball history. That, my friends, is what makes it wild. That's your Buffalo Wild Wings Wild Stat of the Day. We get a bottom of the hour local sports center coming your way next, and we'll come back to talk a little more professional basketball. Rick Nolan will join us right here on The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed, 3:41 as we continue on ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, we are Toledo sports leader.
It's been very challenging, just from the simple fact of how many guys have been in and out. This is a difficult year for our team. Seems like I say that every year, but this one has been much even more challenging. With everybody that's been out and coming back in and the rotations and things of that nature has been very challenging on our team. But we have to figure it out. At the end of the day, we have a game every other day or every 2 days, just like everybody else in the NBA, and we have to go out and play.
LeBron James laying it out. He said this has been his most frustrating season so far. It's the most challenging season for a variety of reasons, and the record pretty much shows that. Cavaliers continuing to struggle. They've lost 4 in a row, 8 out of their last 10, and joining us now to talk about it is Cavaliers beat writer Rick Nolan making his return to ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Rick, how are you?
I'm doing well. Before we delve into all things wrong with the Cavs right now, can I give you a quick little anecdote about the great lengths I'll go to be on your fantastic show?
Let's hear it.
But normally I leave 3 hours and 15 minutes before every home game, and when you texted the day to be on, I realized that was going to put me on the road for the bulk of our conversation. I would have left at 3:45 in my 179,000-mile, 11-year-old Ford Focus is not the most quiet running automobile in Northeast Ohio right now. So in order to be able to do this, when you texted, I actually left the house a half hour early, and I am now sitting speaking to you quietly at a rest stop between Medina and Brunswick.
Wow, Rick Nolan, my goodness, my friend, I owe you big time for that. That is going the extra mile, or the extra 179,000 miles, however you want to look at it. That is impressive. Thank you for making the extra effort. I didn't mean to inconvenience you in your normal game day.
Not routine. A problem at all. A lot of it has to do with my OCD self. If I get a little bit out of my habits, I'm thrown off for the rest of the night, so this will still put me at the queue at my normal arriving time, and all good.
But now I feel bad because I'm going to go ahead and assume that if your car is loud while riding, it's probably loud while sitting there and idling, so you're probably sitting there freezing right now.
No, it's actually okay when I'm not pressing hard on the gas for reason.
So it's still running.
So I do have the heat. I have the heat on, and I parked in a sunny spot, so we're all good.
The thought of you sitting in a cold parking lot at a rest stop on the way to the queue, that's good stuff. All right, Rick Nolan, first of all, before we get into all things Cavaliers, just give me your take on the Paul Pierce, Isaiah Thomas thing, because this is kind of a Cavaliers thing, I suppose. Jalen Rose calling Paul Pierce petty last night on ESPN for saying, hey, it's my jersey retirement night. I'd kind of like to not have to share the spotlight with another player being tributed that night. And Rajon Rondo, former Pierce teammate, of course, when they won their championship, said, why is Isaiah Thomas getting a tribute anyway? Dude played 2 years and plus 21 games there, lost in the first round of the playoffs twice, then went to the conference finals and lost when he didn't play because he was injured. Is this what we do now? We give video tributes for dudes who go to conference finals. What's your take on that whole thing?
Well, I mean, the bulk of the fault, I believe, goes strongly on Pierce. But before I go into that, Isaiah could have, you know, he declined the first one because he wasn't playing and his family wasn't going to be there. Well, he could have just let him do it that night. It's only going to be a 60 to 90 second video tribute.
Exactly. And the family my can understanding, see it on YouTube later, I'm sure.
Yeah, and they could do the same thing on Paul Pierce's retirement jersey night. Just play it before the game starts, and then the rest of the night belongs to Paul Pierce, who, you know, is a very deserving of having his jersey retired. But I don't think it justifies the criticism of IT. Granted, yeah, he was there less than 3 years, but he went through a lot of stuff with his sister. He was a very popular player there. You know, he played the night that she died or the night after she died. I think they just want to show their appreciation for him. And I don't think in any way, shape, or form they meant it to detract from Paul Pierce's night. It's going to be a lengthy halftime ceremony, and that jersey was going to go to the rafters. I think, you know, I get why IT canceled it the first time, but it's really going to not be that big a deal. And I really don't understand, you know, why Paul Pierce is so insecure that he can't share 60 seconds of a night that's going to be 99% about him with a guy who played there last year. It shows you that you know, athletes are, you know, like many other people, they're so insecure, and I guess it just has to be all about Paul Pierce.
You know, the frustrating thing about it for me, Rick, is you know, this isn't Paul Pierce jumping up and down and saying, hey, what's this going on here? What do I see going on here? He was asked. Danny Ainge came to him and said, hey, Paul, since IT didn't want to do this last time around in his first time back, the next time is when we're doing your thing. You okay with this? It should not have been something that was put to Paul Pierce to say yes or no to. The Celtics
Absolutely.
Are the ones who dropped the ball here. The Celtics should have said to IT, look, you know, if you want to do this, we're going to have to do it your first time back. You don't have to be playing. It doesn't matter. It's about how you played here. And if you, because the second time is Paul's night, and the third time it would just look stupid because it's your third time back to do a tribute then. So we're just going to do this in the first game or else we're going to have to pass it up. I think the Celtics dropped the ball here more than anybody else, and they make a couple of guys look bad over it.
Well, or they could have not asked at all after the first time even and just done it in this upcoming game. If they asked Paul Pierce, I'm sure thinking that he was going to say, sure, absolutely, no problem, and he didn't. So that opened up a whole can of worms that didn't even be open. My personal opinion is if they'd have done the little video tribute prior to this next game, Paul Pierce wouldn't even give it a second thought. You know, you didn't even have to say you were going to do it. They only play there this one more time. Yeah. Just do it, get it over with, and move on. I think it's grown men, especially Paul Pierce, acting like children, basically.
Yeah, boy, we see very, very differently on this. I think Paul Pierce, who played 15 years in a city and is having something like his jersey being retired, it really should be his night. To share even you know, a minute and a half of it with another player who's not going to be an all-time Celtic legend, who's not. This is the Boston Celtics. You know, why are they giving video tributes to a dude who played for 2 years there, 2 years plus 21 games? You give tributes to Larry. You give tributes to even to Dennis Johnson for his contributions to all those championships, to you know, to players who were like, you know, legendary figures there. Dude had 2 years plus 21 games. I kind of just wonder why they want to mix that into a legend, a 15-year Celtics legendary night like that. I just find it very bizarre to me. And I think Paul had a right to say, you know what, if you're doing Paul Pierce night, I'd like it to be Paul Pierce night, not Paul Pierce plus a guy who was here for 2 years. When does Jay Crowder get his video? That's what I want to know.
Well, you know what, though? What's the next? They're going to ask Paul Pierce if the dance team is okay if they dance during a first quarter timeout, or does it have to be a lengthy Paul Pierce tribute?
Well, you know what, maybe that would help.
We're going to agree to disagree on this one because he's getting his night, and I'm sure it's going to be a great night. And to get upset about something so trivial and something that's going to take 60 seconds, whether you
agree on that word, by the way, we agree on the word trivial. It is trivial, and it's the idea that they're putting up a video tribute to a guy who played for 2 years there plus 21 games is trivial. It's a trivial matter, and I don't think they should be doing it. Not that night or any other night for that matter, because, I mean, exactly how often do you – You know, what is, how low are we lowering the bar to get video tributes when somebody's been well,
we
two
could
years
go,
and
we could go it. Into some of the numbers that the Cavs have retired if we really wanted to talk at length about that, but you know, we're talking about two entirely different organizations.
And you're right, by the way, that's kind of the point. That is so true. If this was another organization that didn't have all of the numbers they do and all of the championship banners they have hanging in the rafters at the Garden, this maybe is a non-story because, like, man, this is one of the greatest players we've ever seen. We're going to give this guy a tribute. But in Boston, of all places, you know, his career there, short as it was, 2 years plus 21 games, doesn't warrant that. In Cleveland, maybe that would have warranted it because you're right. There's some numbers hanging up there where you scratch your head and go, really? That's an all-timer? No, there's got to be a higher standard than that. The bar, I think, should be higher than that. All right, that's good stuff. All right, now let's get into LeBron's comments, and I think it's true. It is very frustrating. It's got to be for him. And the problem, Rick Nolan, as you understand, is that this most frustrating season that he is describing of his career, or most challenging season of his career, is coming in a walk year, and everybody wonders where he's going to be next year. Can you marry those two things together, the way they're playing in January, this 8 out of 10 losing streak, which followed a really, really bad stretch at the start of the season, which bookended, of course, a 19-game winning streak or whatever it was. Where do you see this team in April when it's playoff time based on what you're seeing right now, and how do you think that will impact LeBron's long-term plans, Rick Nolan?
There's a lot of questions in that, so interrupt me when I start talking too much about one. The obvious thing is that they've not been very good in January for the fourth straight year now, and they made three straight NBA finals, so let's just put that out there. That doesn't mean they're going to make it this year, but there is that to consider. And it was less than a month ago that many of us were talking about this is possibly being the best team that LeBron James ever played on in Cleveland. Well, you know, 9 losses in 12 games has certainly changed some opinions on that as well. I think the most difficult thing is because of LeBron's contract situation, and it's always been this way since he came back for the most part, other than last year, is that, you know, you can't, You have to make short-sighted decisions to increase your chances the year he is there, not knowing what he's going to do the following year. I don't know if that makes sense, but, you know, do you trade the Brooklyn pick and something else to give yourselves a better chance this year when knowing full well it still might not be enough? Or do you keep that pick, hope that's enough to convince him to come back after this season, and better yourself if he doesn't long term? It's really difficult, I think, to have been, as David Griffin probably would tell you, and I'm sure Kobe Altman's finding out now, it's not an easy thing to be a general manager on a team with LeBron James on it, because the most they've ever known is 2 years, since he came back, that he was going to be here. You know, last year was a unique area for that, but they're in the same predicament now they were in his first 2 years. Is he coming back? You know, I'd be shocked if he doesn't opt out, which means they're at least going to have to go through that period where everybody can throw max dollars at him.
Right.
But my gut instinct still is that he is coming back, but you know, it's his right to put what he thinks is the optimal pressure on them to win a championship now by not saying that. And even if he doesn't know, I still think there's at least 50, 55, maybe even 60% chance he comes back. But
is there any hint of it, Rick? Is there any hint of it, or is there any? Are you more concerned about it? Is your percentage that you're giving me right now a little bit lower because of current comments about how this has been his most challenging and frustrating season? Because you're right. They've had these swoons in January for four straight years now, and they've overcome it before. But, you know, this particular time he's saying this is the hardest it's been. And I think even, you know, in previous swoons, it hasn't been 9 out of 12 bad, 4 losses in a row bad, that kind of thing.
Well, I guess my biggest belief in why he's coming back is LeBron is extremely concerned about his legacy and how he's going to be remembered. Now, you could take the flip side of what I'm about to say and say, well, wouldn't it be an unbelievable thing if he went to another slightly above middle of the pack team and led them to the NBA Finals, and he would have done it with three teams. But I think for him to walk away from his hometown team not only once but twice would be a really black eye to a lot of people. And so for that, you know, that's the primary reason I think he's coming back, and he's from here. He's got the, you know, he's got a kid that's going to be in high school in a couple of years. I think he'd like him to go ultimately to St. Vincent, St. Mary. I don't know that, but I have a hard time believing
pretty,
that.
The odds are pretty good on that. He would like that, and he would like to be here to watch him or be there to watch him. There's no question about that. As much as his Cavalier schedule would allow, certainly being in another city would make that more challenging. So let's go back to more pressing matters like the February deadline. You mentioned the pick. It is of course unprotected, so it could mean as high as the number one overall pick. I kind of had the feeling that if that's a bargaining chip on in trades right now, potential trades right now, you do not use it unless it is for something spectacular that would include not only chasing a championship this year, but also making LeBron want to stay long term. And that would be a move for an Anthony Davis, something like that, where you're going to match what the Warriors did when they picked up KD with, yeah, well, here's our response to that. It's Anthony Davis. We'll give up the Brooklyn pick for that and whatever else other pieces need to go for that to make everything work. And that'll make LeBron say, wow, I can play next to this cat for the next 3, 4, 5, 6 years, right, whatever it is. Then you lock it in. Other than something like that, I don't think you use that pick just to get another shooting guard. I don't think you use that pick to get another little piece of a puzzle. You need it has to be a finishing piece. Agree or disagree?
Well, agree. I mean, I think any player you get, I think, would have to be on par or better than players you would hope to keep in the trade, and that means Isaiah Thomas and Kevin Love. So essentially you would be trying to compile a big four.
Yeah.
And ideally you'd be wanting to do it without a half a season rental player, you know, be it Paul George or DeAndre Jordan or somebody there's no guarantee you're going to keep beyond this season. But the catch 22 with the pick now too, though, is it's a little easier for the Cavs to trade it because it's more than likely going to be in the 8, 9, 10 range as opposed to the 1, 2, 3 area. But the flip side is, you're not going to get nearly as much for it now, because Brooklyn is having a much better season than most people expected them to have. And Bob, look at the Cavs roster. If you're New Orleans, number one, I don't know why you would want to trade Anthony Davis, but it's going to take more than a pick. They could be 7, 8, 9, 10. And what do the Cavs have on their roster other than Kevin Love that you'd be interested in getting?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the
you
answer.
You certainly don't want J.R. Smith, and you know, maybe you take Tristan as part of the deal, but you know, you're Anthony Davis, you're talking about a guy who's in the top 5 or 10 players in the league. You're just not going to get him for a first round pick.
No, that would have to be a piece of a puzzle, no doubt about it. The only reason I brought him up is because his name has been floated as you know, being a possible trade piece that the Pelicans might want to trade him while the value is at its highest, and they're talking about, you know, acquiring him, for example, sending him to Boston. How about that? The team the Cavaliers are chasing, or one of two teams are chasing, for a Jason Tatum who's the other piece? Well, I'm drawing a blank, but the point is his name has been floated out there. His name has been floated out there that if the Pelicans feel like they're going to lose him eventually anyway, they might be able to get him while his maximum value is high right now, and they can get a couple of really young superstar-type players in exchange for him. And in the Cavaliers' case, it would be that pick would be you know, the most valuable chip.
Yeah, that's, you know, the other difficult part of it, too. And Jaylen Brown is probably the other player from Boston they would want, I would imagine. But, you know, just because the Cavs might be willing or want to make that deal, well, there's, you know, four or five other teams in the league that think that adding a player of Anthony Davis caliber might put them over the top. So you're not just dealing with the Pelicans, you're dealing with the competition and what you can offer them as opposed to what those teams can offer them. And if I'm New Orleans, I certainly think, you know, that, you know, the rookie and Jaylen Brown are much more attractive than Tristan Thompson and Iman Shumpert or whatever other, you know, player you're not really using, you're going to try to convince them to take, even with that number one pick included, because it's not going to be, unless Brooklyn really goes in the dumper, it's not going to be the pick we thought it was going to be when the Kyrie trade was originally made.
That's very true. So you real quick, Rick, because we're out of time and you're probably running out of gas sitting at the rest stop. I know there's still 3 weeks, so we'll probably ask you this again in a week or so. But right now, would you be leaning toward the Cavaliers do make a move either involving that pick or not, or they try to just stand pat and let this chemistry develop over the next month with the roster they have?
Don't really have a great feel for that, Bob. I think they will make some type of move. I'm not convinced it's going to be a move involving that pick unless it's a deal they really like with LeBron and would also like if by chance he doesn't come back next year.
Fair enough. Rick Noland. Rick, we'll talk again, obviously, like I said, well before the trading deadline happens, and maybe we'll get a better feel then, and maybe they won't be on a 9 out of 12 game losing streak and a 4-game losing streak and everything else, and things will look a little bit more optimistic from that point on. Rick, get back in the car, get that focus on the prowl, add a few more miles to it, and have a good time at the queue tonight. We'll talk to you again real soon.
All righty. I'm in reverse right now, putting my seatbelt on.
Thank you, Rick Noland. God bless. Thanks for extra effort, too. All right, Rick Noland joining us. He pulled over so that his loud car would not interfere with our conversation. That is a dedicated guy. What a great guest and what a great writer, by the way. Okay, that's it. We'll get a quick time out of here. Top of the hour, local sports center coming your way. Don't forget Todd Kowalczyk talks Rockets basketball. That's a red hot team, by the way. That'll be at 4:40, and the phone lines are open for the next half hour. Dial now at 866-240-1064.
DeRozan, a pretty move in the lane. BJB throws it down. Three doesn't go. Valanciunas in a crowd with a rebound. JV working big, working strong. Pass is ultimately stolen away. Bradley gives it to Harrison, a slam dunk. DeRozan.
That's critical. What a pass.
What a dish. DeRozan over Boban, and it's good. Here's a drive, and Bradley with the slam. Here's CJ, the open three from Hamilton. The hammer. The three, DeRozan just short. There's Pirtle. Plus the foul.
I think in the last three quarters we fought hard, but the first quarter counts. And there's just not very many times where we play a good defensive first quarter. It's disappointing. You're working out of that hole, and then late in the game we have a chance, and we're not up on two pick and rolls late, and Lowry and Miles hit back-to-back threes. All we've got to do is be up. I thought in between first quarter and then we fought really hard, and then when it was winning time, we didn't do our job.
It's been very challenging, just from the simple fact of how many guys have been in and out. You know, this is a difficult, you know, year for our team. It seems like I say that every year, but this one has been much even more challenging. You know, with everybody that's been out and coming back in and the rotations and things of that nature, it's been very challenging on our team. But we have to figure it out. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, we have a game every other day or every 2 days, just like everybody else in the NBA. You know, we have to go out and play.
We see this every year. I know they have issues. I know the issues seem even deeper, that the players are even concerned, hey, we need a little more help here as well. It's just tough for me to say, oh, yeah, this isn't going to be the year when you have LeBron James and when you get to the playoffs that they figure it out.
I think it was petty. On Paul Pierce's part. There are going to be all type of announcements that happen the 48 minutes during that game. All types, including celebrating Isaiah Thomas could be one of them. What does not take away from your situation like Kobe's that happened during the game, because they're doing yours post-game.
In this day and age, everything's going to come under scrutiny. And if you fall short like the Pittsburgh Steelers fell short, people are going to say, hey, what about this guy? It just, to me, it's laughable that a franchise that has been the most stable franchise in all of football, that doesn't change coaches, but rarely, all of a sudden is making a head coach. It's not happening.
I think these things are never reasonable. I think there's sort of like just reactions and angry reactions in the moment after losses. which in this case was like, what, 48 hours or less for those investors who might be upset. And so, no, Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season. He's won a Super Bowl. He's been to another. The Pittsburgh Steelers community was embarrassed by what happened last. Yeah. That is what they're taking out now on the only person they probably feel they can, yeah. Mike Tomlin.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
There's a reason why they're taking it out on Mike Tomlin out in Pittsburgh. The same reason I was taking it out on him sitting here in Toledo. The reason is because he is not a good big game coach. He's a good team builder to get a team into a championship situation. He just doesn't win in championship situations. Big games, whether it be the regular season or playoffs, he doesn't win. And yes, I know he won a Super Bowl. He won that Super Bowl with Bill Cowher's team. And it took two of the most spectacular plays ever by individual greatness of the players, James Harrison and Santonio Holmes, to avoid an enormous upset at the hands of the Arizona Cardinals back when that happened in 2008. But what have you done for me lately? In his last eight playoff games, what I called championship situations, in his last eight playoff games, he's 3-5. And if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I am thrilled with 11 wins a year and 3-5 in playoff games and everything else. If I'm the Indianapolis Colts, if I'm the Chicago Bears, and based on the way those teams are built right now, I am perfectly happy if I get all of the wins and all of the production that I'm getting from a Mike Tomlin coach team. But if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers and I have the most talented roster of skill position players in football, either conference, if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers and I have really the deepest roster, period, in the National Football League, and I am constantly losing in championship games because of terrible play calling, terrible game preparation, terrible management of the roster, terrible focus and discipline on the team and on the football field, I'm disappointed. I'm expecting championships. I'm expecting winning championship games, not just getting there. That's just the way that that I feel about it. If you are, you know, a middle of the road NFL team, you would pay, you know, you'd give them a John Gruden $100 million 10-year contract. The way the Raiders just did for Gruden, for Mike Tomlin to come and coach your team, if you're a middle-of-the-road team. But if you are a championship-caliber team and you are not winning championships that your caliber dictates that you should, you're looking to take the next step up. Now, they're not going to fire him, so everybody calm down and relax. They're not going to fire him, and I'm not saying that he should be fired. I am saying simply that Pittsburgh has a higher aspiration. They should have a higher aspiration than most of the other teams in the National Football League. You're either in it to win it, or you're just not in it at all when you're there. And when you have the talent that they have, when you have the organization that they have, you're in it to win the whole damn thing, not just to, you know what, we have great years every year. We win at least 9 or 10 or 11 games every year. Sometimes we get hot and win 13, and we go to the playoffs, and occasionally we win a playoff game, but then usually we lose the next one because we're not going back to Super Bowls. They haven't been to one in 8 years. And again, this is all contextual. You have to understand the context here. If you're the Browns and you've never been to a Super Bowl, if you're the Lions and you've never been to a Super Bowl, if you are the, help me out, Kush, who else hasn't been to one yet?
Texans haven't been to one.
Texans have never been to Super Bowl.
I'm literally trying to think of the various franchises.
There's one more. Oh, the Jaguars.
Jaguars, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, they have not been to one.
That this weekend.
Yes, they can.
If you're one of those teams who has never been to a Super Bowl, then I get it. You're like, shut up about it. I haven't been there in 8 years. Shut up about that. Okay, fair enough. But when you're the Steelers and you already have a whole bunch of those things, and when you are the most talented team in the league and all you need to do is channel that talent and focus it and not allow guys to be distracted by who they're playing 2 weeks from now and rather than who's next, not allow guys to be distracted by their contract situations 2 days before a playoff game, getting into the media and on social media tweeting guaranteed victories and looking forward to rematches with another team, disrespecting the one in front of you and allowing yourself to get punked by them. Sorry. When that's happening, there's room for some criticism, and that's what the people of Pittsburgh are doing, apparently. That's why you heard that from Mike Wilbon. The Steelers should be embarrassed by what happened, and they should be asking for some accountability because of what happened. And who do you hold accountable more than your head coach? The coach who doesn't set the tone for a disciplined football team. And I think that's important to say. And I say that once again as a fan of Mike Tomlin. But I am also a realist when I recognize in-game coaching decisions and game preparation, they're not there. I like him as a man, and I like his record. His winning percentage is terrific, but I've got to be realistic when I see what I see. And if I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers, I'm thinking we need somebody who's in it to win it, not just get us there. All right, let's go to Toledo and talk to Jimmy. We haven't talked to Jimmy in a few days. Good to have you back on the air, my friend. What's on your mind this afternoon?
Hey, real quick, because I've been trying to get a hold of you for about a week about the Tomlin situation, because I'm a Steelers fan, of course.
Yes, sir.
But real quick bullet point about the previous topic about Isaiah Thomas. The Celtics fans, it's more or less they're just grateful. I mean, that little dude, that 5'8", he's 5'9", I'm 7 foot. That dude's 5'8". He came out of nowhere and balled it up with a lot of swagger, kind of brought them back out of the irrelevant stage that they were at, because, like I was telling Kush in the break, them guys today, nobody knows about them banners. The young people today, they were basically the Paul Pierce, Celtics, Sands, Antoine Walker. Okay, they were going nowhere. They hadn't been in the playoffs, and then Isaiah come riding in, and bam, they're in the playoffs. And those people, if he hadn't done what he hadn't done, then they don't have Kyrie Irving today, and they're not a destination. Okay, they don't get that trade because Kyrie ain't in town, and they're not where they're at today. So they're thanking that little...
I still think
it's
an extraordinarily low bar for a video tribute to just say somebody came here and made the playoffs. However, hold on. However, if I agree with you and say, okay, they have that appreciation because he's only 5'8 and he overcame and blah, blah, blah. If I say okay, then Isaiah has to say okay and say that they can play that video on their terms.
I grew up with Larry Bird and Kevin McHale and all the Cedric Maxwell. I go all the way back, okay? So I'm dyed through and through Celtics fan. I grew up with that, okay? So I'm good with that. I'm not really arguing that. I'm just telling you that's the affection for that guy. That's why they love him, and they kind of like overlook. That's why he's kind of probably loved, and they have that kind of affection for him, is because they know they've got a whole nother lease on life now with Kyrie in town, so they're kind of making an exception for him. That's all I'm saying. Now, as far as Tomlin is concerned, here's the thing. I'm 47. We've had three head coaches in my entire lifetime. And now it's like Tomlin's been there longer than Cowher has, right?
No, Cowher was there for 15.
Okay,
Tomlin has just finished his 11th.
Okay, because I knew Kyle was there. I think he replaced Nolan in 90 because I was overseas in the service. But anyways, the point is, one of the strengths of the organization has always been their continuity. Sure. They're like the complete opposite of the Browns. The problem is, one of the things, ironically, now that's starting to hurt them, is this whole notion of accountability is starting to conflict with the continuity. We have no accountability now for the coach because we're clinging to this. Oh yeah, but look, our strength is this continuity. Well, the problem is like you just point out, Coach Tomlin's 3-5 in his last eight championship game or his last eight games in the playoffs. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to make a statement right now. And this isn't because I'm a Ben Roethlisberger fanboy or Steelers homer. In the last 5 years with the talent that this team has had, okay, I would wager that they were more talented than the Patriots. And I would tell you that if you put Ben Roethlisberger and you just looked at him as a quarterback, he's every bit, if not more talented than Tom Brady is. But he's not had the Patriot way and Bill Belichick. I would tell you that you couldn't put Tom Brady and switch the roles and have him win any more Super Bowls than Ben Roethlisberger in Pittsburgh. But I can tell you that Ben Roethlisberger has more ways of beating you than Brady has, because I don't think Brady's way can win as many games as Roethlisberger did if you put them on other teams, because Ben has more ways to beat you. I think Brady wound up in the perfect place.
I would disagree with that slightly. I would agree with the part where Roethlisberger is probably more talented than Brady. He's got a bigger arm. There's no question about that. He's a bigger guy. He can win with his feet more. He has kept plays alive. All those kinds of things. He from a pure talent standpoint, I would agree. I would disagree that Roethlisberger would be winning just as much in New England with the Belichick way or the Patriot way as Brady, and vice versa that in Pittsburgh. Only because Brady's attribute that Ben doesn't have is discipline and decision making. For example, the throw that he made that was intercepted at the end of that game against the Patriots, ironically enough, after the terrible no call or the terrible no touchdown call when James was in the end zone with the ball. When he hurries up and makes that throw, I guarantee you Tom Brady doesn't make that throw. I guarantee you Brady throws that ball to the fifth row and we're going for overtime. Now, whether he wins in overtime or not, nobody knows. But that's just one example of the lack of, you know, just decision-making in the moment that made Brady the great. He has it. And most other guys, this isn't picking on Roethlisberger, but just 99% of the guys who has ever played the position have not had that discipline and that decision-making.
That's a legitimate point, but it's also what's made Roethlisberger great and been his ability to make just ridiculous plays and ridiculous throws. And here's the thing, though. Roethlisberger would not have been in that position if he had another coach like a Belichick. He wouldn't have been in those stupid positions.
Now, that I
there
agree
been...
wholeheartedly.
I didn't call to argue about Roethlisberger v. Brady. It's just
No.
I'm talking about
Belichick versus Tomlin more than
right.
anything.
If
Bill Belichick was coaching that Steelers team this past Sunday, there is no way the Jacksonville Jaguars win that game.
In some ways, it's the subtext of the whole point. It's Tomlin versus Belichick is a perfect way to illustrate the whole thing, because in the end, what we're really saying here is look at the standard. It's winning. And you could sit here and we can say that really, if you look at the last 5 years, the Steelers have arguably had much better talent, a better cast of characters, should I say, than even the Patriots. But look at the results.
Exactly.
And look at the legacy.
Right. That's the reason I started, you know, saying that I can't call for Mike Tomlin's job, a guy with a 664 winning percentage
exactly.
in 11 years. You can't call, or 644, with one Super Bowl championship, albeit, again, in his second year, and that was kind of Cowers in a large way. But a guy with his winning percentage, you can't call for his job. But I am saying,
unless you want the right guy
to help them win another championship, I don't know that he is.
And that's the whole point. At some point, that's the weakness. It's like, wait a second. If we want to make the standard here what we're competing to beat, which is the Patriots, then that has got to be the standard. Because now I've said probably for the last 3 years that Coach Tomlin's basically a better soundbite now than he is a decision maker on the sideline.
And by the way, to turn this into just Tomlin can't beat Belichick is a little unfair too, because if that
Jimmy, let me finish the thought, please.
Because some people are saying, well, you know, he's not Belichick, but nobody else is. I mean, if that's the only standard, he can't beat Belichick. Well, then you wouldn't be happy with anybody. It's not just Belichick he's losing to, though. When you're losing to Doug Marrone this past week against the Jaguars, when they are more prepared and more disciplined and more ready for a game than your deeply much more talented roster is, now I can say this isn't just, hey, he's not as good as Belichick. He's getting beat by also-ran or nobody or up-and-coming head coaches.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the more superior talent, and that's something that Pittsburgh's ownership is really going to have to look at.
Well, and this is what they need to do then. They need to have at the organizational, at the top, they need to go to Tomlin quietly, but in no uncertain terms say, this is it. You let your players know that they win for you and you're going to be accountable because you're coaching for your job this time. You're going to be accountable for the results now. That's what needs to be done, a Super Bowl or bust, basically, because that's what needs to be done. And also, Everybody, the fourth and one calls were crazy, atrocious. But the whole thing with this 3-4, I wanted to go for 4-3. The 3-4 zone thing is played out big time. But the whole thing is this season they were going to play the 3-4, but they were going to walk those cornerbacks up and start knocking people. Because one of the reasons they lose New England year after year is they sit back in that zone and Brady carves them up. They give up all these horrible third down easy conversions and whatnot, and then every once in a while they give up these huge, huge gainers. But that last drive by Jacksonville, Blake Bortles was carving them up on third and five. They get everybody to third and five, but this year what they were doing is they were walking Hayden up, they're walking Burns up, and they were actually trying to take people and get aggressive with them instead of laying back all the time. And on those last couple drives, you know what they did? They were giving them 10-yard cushions, and instead of blitzing and getting up and making Bortles get rid of the ball, they went in like a soft shell, and that's what they used to do. And it's like, man, when push came to shove, they couldn't even have faith and stick to the plan. And that's Mike Tomlin. That is the whole – he's the defensive guru, right? That's his background. Secondary and defensive coordinator. If he's hanging his hat on that, and the whole point was to bring in like Keith Butler and to kind of change up the 3-4 and put like some different concepts, and they were going to get more aggressive and bump and run coverage and not sit back and play so much, give so much cushion on the corners. They got out of it in that last couple drives, and they just got ate up.
Well, the only thing you can hope as a Steelers fan, and thank you, Jimmy, I got to go by, my friend. Thanks for the call. The only thing you can hope for as a Steelers fan, because they're not going to fire him, and again, maybe they shouldn't. I'm not saying definitively they should, but I think they need to start entertaining the question as to whether or not this is the guy to win championships. He's certainly going to win divisions. He's certainly going to win double-digit games, and he's certainly going to go to the playoffs. Is he the guy to help you win championships, which is what the bar should be over there in Pittsburgh? You're going to have to be settled for the fact that, he decided Todd Haley can go. He's going to replace him with the quarterback's coach that Roethlisberger likes. He probably should look at the rest of the staff as well and decide if that defense, which has been in a little bit underachieving, certainly no fault of theirs, of course, that the Ryan Shazier thing happened, and he's their best defense player, but is Butler the right guy for their defense coordinator? But he's going to have to settle for him hiring other people beneath him to counter, in my opinion, for his own shortcomings. And it's going to take somebody else to prepare these guys from a disciplinary standpoint. If Mike Tomlin likes being liked by people, which he does, he likes being a player's coach. They love him. They'll never say a bad thing about him. He likes that. And who wouldn't? I get that. But if that's how he's going to be, and because of that laissez-faire, I just let my guys be themselves, and they love me for that attitude, if that's going to lead to their own distractions, if that's going to lead to inappropriate and damaging social media comments, if it's going to lead to inappropriate comments to the regular media that fire up other teams and make it look like you are not prepared, that sort of thing, not to mention making bad game time decisions, such as onside kicks with 2:18 to go in a one-score game. Those kinds of things, are his shortcomings. You're going to have to hope that he can overcome those with some of the new staff moves that are being made. All right. That's enough about him, and that's enough about them. It is a big story, though. It is an interesting one. And he's right when he said, this is a weird thing about it. He said it's the exact opposite of the Cleveland Browns, who have turned over coaches, what, every 2 years, Jim, for about the last 8 or 9 or 10 years?
That's got to be the average,
An average of 2 years. Chudzinski got, one.
One.
Petten got two?
Two. Petten got two.
Shurmur got one or two?
He got two. No. Chudzinski was the only one who actually only got single season. Everybody else at least got two.
Mangini got two?
Yeah, because they were both 5-11. I remember that.
Jackson has gotten two and is about to get three. It'll probably be 2.5 because he'll be fired by the midpoint of the next season. And everybody says, man, that's no way to run a franchise. There's no continuity. There's no stability. That's why it's such a wreck. And it's true. It is. But they've had the wrong guy each time. So how do you keep on keeping on for the sake of continuity when you've got a guy who's in over his head? And that's what they've had. And that's what they have now. Hugh Jackson isn't over his head, but they're saying, well, we got to be continuity. Look at the Steelers. We got to have continuity. Got to have continuity. Okay, but sometimes that can be your downfall, as Jimmy just said. Sometimes can be your downfall. Because you are known for and you revel in being the stable franchise that always has all of their ducks in a row. They don't change coaches every 2 years just because somebody has a bad year. They don't do it every 5 years even. They coach until coaches are done coaching. Chuck Knoll coached from 1969 to 1991. When did he leave? When he decided he was done. That led to Bill Cowher, 1992 to 2006. When did he leave? When he decided he was done. And it has led to Mike Tomlin, 2007 to right now. And when will he leave? Probably when he decides that he is done. This is the Steeler way. And while it can be a great thing in some circumstances, considering their Super Bowl ring total, it can also be the albatross. If you're unwilling to make a move that's going to take you from the cusp of another championship, the cusp of another Super Bowl, to winning the next championship, winning the next Super Bowl, if you're not willing to make that move to go from that point to the higher point, well, then you're just going to be stuck spinning your wheels at that point. I feel like that's kind of where the way it is with Pittsburgh. Having said all that, it is going to be an interesting championship game in the AFC with the Patriots hosting the Jaguars. Tom Brady, you've probably heard this news all day. I've made a point of not talking about it today, not because I'm being a jerk, really, although I sometimes am. I've made a point of not talking about the story because I find it to be just so much crap. It's Bill Belichick being Bill Belichick. It's the Patriots being shifty. It's the Patriots putting out smoke screens. It's the Patriots out there giving a little bit of a news leak to the media, trying to change the focus or alter the way that their opponent prepares for a game. And that is the news story of Tom Brady hurt himself at practice today. He hurt himself at practice. He had to have an x-ray. His hand got injured. You know, there are non-contact practices now. You know that there were contact practices. Tom Brady is the quarterback wearing the red shirt that says, do not touch. How did he hurt himself? Oh, handing off. He jammed his hand while handing off during practice. Not really buying it. I think it's just a smokescreen. Tom Brady will be there. He'll be 100%, and he'll be ready to go. But I have to throw it out there because others believe that the reason for the smokescreen is to provide cover for the legacy. Meaning, if that Jaguars defense is as legit as some think it is, if that defense has the answer for Tom Brady and the Patriots lose in an upset at Foxborough, we don't want the ding on Brady's legacy to be too deep, too dark, too prominent. He played injured. Otherwise, he probably would have won. That's the way I think this is going, and I'm not going to give it any credence. I'm just kind of just throwing it out there. I just think that's probably a big Bill Belichick smokescreen. Having said that, by the way, I think that Brady and the Patriots are going to beat the Jaguars by double digits. I really do. That Jaguars defense, as vaunted as it is, gave up 42 points to Roethlisberger, Brown, and Bell. 42 points in a postseason game. They just got lucky that Mike Tomlin didn't have the Steelers ready to play, and their defense was a no-show. But that defense of Jacksonville's, as vaunted as it is, got picked apart by Roethlisberger. And yes, it can and probably will be picked apart by Brady as well. So I think the Patriots and Bill Belichick will absolutely do what Mike Tomlin could not do, and that's out-coach the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we'll pick that a little bit. We're going to do more picks. We're going to get all of your picks. We'll get your phone calls to pick both championship games. Minnesota at Philadelphia might be an even better game than the one in Foxborough is going to be, and we'll talk a lot about that tomorrow. All right, going to get a timeout here at the bottom of the hour with the local sports center coming your way. Then we're going to get into college basketball once again with Todd Kowalczyk, the head coach of the Red Hot Toledo Rockets. They have won four in a row and seven out of their last eight. They sit in first place in the MAC West, and they've got a big one coming up against Kent State coming up on Saturday. So we're going to talk to Coach Kowalczyk. And speaking of the Toledo Rockets, how about we hook you up with tickets to that game against Kent State? It's at Savage on Saturday. We've got a pair of club seats with a free parking pass for you, too, just to make it all-encompassing. And I'm going to give that away right now to caller number 7. Caller number 7, since they've won 7 of their last 8, why the heck not? Caller 7-866-240-1065. Dial us up right now. Excuse me. You'll see UT, and KSU at Savage on Saturday with club seats and a parking pass. All courtesy of your friends here at ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We're back after this.
The Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
4:43 as we roll along. Congratulations, Bill Schultz of Toledo, who won the UT basketball tickets. Rockets going to take on Kent State on Saturday, looking for their fifth win in a row. This is on the heels of something that probably should have been illegal. You go into somebody's house and you beat them mercilessly the way that the Rockets did to OU in Athens on Tuesday. Probably ought to call the police or at least call the hospital to check on the victim. 91-57, a dominating win in all facets of the game. That's what the Rockets were able to do, and the beatings go on. They have now won four straight, as I mentioned, and seven out of their last eight. And joining us now to talk about the Rockets' season thus far is the head coach, Todd Kowalczyk, for his weekly visit right here on The Ticket. Coach, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. So hopefully Bill Schultz enjoys the game on Saturday night and decides to be a season ticket holder in the future.
There you go. I like that. That's very good advice. Get him in the doorway. You know, it's like a great restaurant. All they got to do is taste the cooking once.
Absolutely. Right?
That's what you do.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Let's talk about the last two. You know, the way the schedule goes, this is kind of how it works. We'll go back to last Saturday because we talked to you the Thursday prior, and that would mean Central Michigan, a very convincing win on the road up at Central, 93-82, followed by, as we mentioned, just a demolition of the Bobcats, 91-57. Let's go back to Saturday first, and, Coach, give us your impressions as you look back at the game against Central.
I think, you know, in that game, we kind of – just jumped on them so early. We made some incredible shots to start the game, and I thought defensively we were really playing with great energy and we're sharp and got up big. And I think that, you know, once you, you know, they made a couple runs at us, but, you know, I think that the start of that game was so important, you know, just for road confidence and kind of, you know, they were, I think, 8 or 9 and 0 at home at the time, hadn't lost a home game and were playing really well, particularly at home. So I thought that was a good confidence win for us. In the second half, we took care of the ball and executed and did the right things to win that game pretty convincingly. So I think Central Michigan's a team that, you know, because they are so explosive offensively and they play a unique defense, they're going to press the whole game and come back to this matchup zone. That they'll win some games because I think they'll confuse some people, particularly at their place. I think they'll beat some good teams at home. Now I hope they beat a lot of teams at home after we, you know, beat them up there.
Coach, that early start that you talked about to get some road confidence is something that apparently you're getting quite adept at. I'm just looking at the headlines from the last three victories. Toledo jumps out early, beats Western 84-61. You just described a 10-0 lead that you got on Central as you beat them. And then you did the same thing against OU down in Athens, 21-4 right out of the chute. That just demoralizes opponents, doesn't it, when you get out that quick, especially to the home team?
Yeah, and the Ohio U one, to be honest with you guys, I don't think we had great energy to start either half. You know, I think in the first media timeout, it was 5-4, if I'm not mistaken. And I think we, you know, probably lost a little bit of ground, maybe a point or two to start the second half. And we just didn't start, you know, with a lot of talk or a lot of bench energy but boy, we sure played well after that, you know, for the other 15 minutes of both halves. And again, offensively made shots and defensively, you know, big key for us is just being active with our feet, active with, you know, we changed our terminology. We don't talk anymore. We yell, you know, and I think that's helped our players be a little bit more forceful with their communication. And offensively, if we just take good shots against those teams, you know, because you're going to get some good shots if you're as patient, not settle for okay shots.
Talk to me more about what you just said. I think I heard you say that as a positive thing rather than a negative thing. We don't talk anymore on defense. We yell. That's a good thing.
That's a great thing. We want to yell on defense. We want to be forceful with our communication. I think if you talk to any coach in the country, you know, high school or college or obviously the NBA, you know, communicating defensively is so vital. And our incoming freshmen have no idea of what the expectations are as far as, you know, talking and yelling and communicating defensively. You know, they're just way too quiet. And And I've been really happy with, you know, Treshawn Fletcher, you know, yelling on defense, and a couple other guys are followed suit because of his leadership.
Okay, that's good. I wanted to clarify that only because, you know, you can take the word yelling in another way too. It's like we're not talking to one another, we're yelling at one another, as in somebody got by and nobody provided weak side help. Where are you kind of yelling in a negative way? But you mean that in a communication, loud, make sure everybody
yes.
hears you positive way. Okay, I just wanted to clarify on
yeah.
that.
Yeah, well, you can't talk when there's 4,000 people.
Agreed.
You know, if you're just talking, someone's going to say, well, I didn't hear it. You know, that
sure.
You know, that's not an excuse. You don't want to come back to one of our timeouts and say, well, I didn't hear it. You just don't want to do that. So if they yell with each other, it's a little bit better.
Coach, you talk a lot about opponents' field goal percentage whenever we talk about scoring totals and so on and so forth. And I just kind of wanted to run by both of those, the last two games. If you talk about the OU game, you held them to 57 points. And what was it, 39% shooting, if memory serves. And then against Central back on Saturday, they had a much higher point total. They had 82. They shot 47%. But, of course, the pace yep. of that game was a lot higher as you guys were out there running as well. So can you kind of compare and contrast the defensive approaches, one a high-scoring game, one not so well? They were both high-scoring for the Rockets. But defensively, allowed 82 and 157 in the other, and the shooting percentages somewhat reflected that.
I don't have the Central stats in front of me, but I would venture to guess if you had the first half stats for Central, they were pretty good.
Okay.
Defensively. I would, you know, in the low 40s, maybe the high 30s.
I don't have it broken down by half. Yeah. But for the game,
yeah,
yes, it was 47%,
yes,
and they scored
yeah,
39 in
yes.
the first, 43 in the second.
Yeah, and I think the second half, they did shoot a lot higher percentage. And there was a couple things that went with that. I think, you know, we had a hard time guarding the direct ball screen, their point guard, who was a junior college kid, had 29 points. You know, I thought Marion probably, and we probably, you know, put Luke in a bad position. We probably should have kept Luke a little bit lower, in our ball screen coverage to, you know, he got beat off the dribble a little bit as a second line defender instead of just, you know, protecting the rim. But that kid, you know, give him credit. Our goal, you know, is to make them take tough twos. And in the second half, they made some of those tough twos. And obviously they didn't do that at Ohio U, but, 47% is not what we'd like to have. That's for sure. But if you look at our last five game stats right now, teams are shooting 42%, from the floor and 32% from three. Those are pretty solid numbers for us.
No question about it. We're talking to Rockets coach Todd Kowalczyk. Looking back at the week that was, we'll look ahead to the Kent State game in a moment as well. Both of the two games we're talking about from Saturday and Tuesday, Central and OU, you put four guys in double figures, spreading the ball around. You talked, we often talk about how you don't want to put too much pressure on one guy to have to take too many shots. And, you know, whether it's Fletcher or Sanford or anybody else that gets hot, you want to spread it around. And that seems to be the case. In both of the games this week, as the ball has moved around and you have had higher assist totals as well.
Yeah, I like our shot distribution. I like our minute distribution right now in our nine-man rotation. I think that's important. Maybe the one guy that I'd like to try to find some more shots for is Luke Kanapke. The last five games, he's only got 22 attempts. You know, that's probably not enough. But, you know, our two best players are Treshawn and Jalen. You know, they got 63 and 66 attempts. You know, that's, yeah, obviously you always want to have your better players taking the majority of the shots, but, Luke and Matthew, we need to find ways to get him some more, whether it be with post touches or, you know, to be honest, picking pops with him is always a good thing too.
I was just about to ask how you do that when you like the ball distribution, as you said, and you are, you know, the shot totals are really being spread around and you identify one guy maybe who isn't getting quote unquote his fair share, if you will. How do you do that? How do you call ISO plays on the post for him or pick and pops or whatever, without getting it, you know, getting out of the natural flow that you do like as far as everybody else sharing the ball?
Well, I think, you know, because we do run a lot of set plays, you can call his number a little bit more frequently. And he is a guy that you have to call plays for. We can, you know, in transition and as well as our motion, we do throw the ball into him. But if you don't run a set play for Luke, he's not a guy that's just going to break off and just get his own. That's just not his game. You know, so we probably need to call his number a little bit more just to get him a little more, you know, especially around the basket. But, you know, him and Taylor both, our post scoring, has been, I guess, somewhat, that's the one offensive thing that has been a little bit inconsistent. You know, I think they're a little bit off balance right now. We got to get them just to be a little bit more on balance, a little bit stronger in the post.
Coach Todd Kowalczyk talking Rockets basketball with us. Jim Cushman's got a question for you here. Jimmy, go ahead.
And I want to talk about some of the things defensively, especially in this Ohio game. And you correctly scolded me last week, Coach, for don't just look at the points, although giving up just 57 in most college basketball games is a pretty good one. But look at the percentages, holding them to 34% from the field. And, oh, by the way, out-rebounding them 48-29. So talk to me about defensively what was going right for you guys in this one.
Jim, I love you, and I'd never scold you. I would never scold you.
I scold him all the time, Coach. Don't feel bad. It's okay.
Yeah. No, it's the pace of the game. I mean, it's, you know, there's certain, you know, when the game gets going up and down a little bit more, you're going to have more possessions, and more possessions means more shot attempts. You know, but I you know, effective field goal percentage and field goal percentage is really what most coaches look at versus, you know, just points, because points is dictated by your pace of play. But I do think that the Ohio U, you know, part of that too is, let's be honest, is them. I mean, sometimes teams can miss open shots and we look good when that happens, you know, and, you know, maybe when you watch the film, say, man, that was a defensive breakdown. We got lucky. He just missed it. You know, that happens a lot.
Coach, let's look ahead to Saturday. It's Kent State. We just gave some tickets away. Hopefully you're going to have a full house there at Savage of a lot of crazy Rockets fans rooting for win number 5 in a row and number 8 in your last 9 games. What kind of a challenge are the Flashes?
I you know, a very typical Kent State team. You know, Rob Senderoff has been there now, I think, 7 years. They won the MAC tournament last year. You know, they're a team that is really good one-on-one offensively. They got some guards that can really, you know, break you down off the dribble. I think they're a phenomenal offensive rebounding team. They do have a big 6'10" center, De La Rosa, that can really score in the post. They're not as deep as we are, you know, and I think they're a team that will turn it over if we do a good job defensively.
They're 500 overall, but 3-2 in the conference. What do you know about their non-conference schedule? Is that rough?
Yeah, they probably didn't play as well as they'd like to in a non-conference schedule. You know, they've been good at home. You know, they just beat in a very, very close game. They beat Western Michigan.
Yep.
They also beat Ohio U by, I think, 1 point at home. They've struggled on the road. They lost at Miami, and they lost at Northern Illinois.
Well, the Rockets and the Flashes will get it on Saturday at Savage. And, Coach Todd Kowalczyk, keep the beatings going on. Keep the pressure on. We're certainly loving what we're seeing as this conference schedule has got underway. And then, of course, Tuesday it's Western, so another challenge there. So the Saturday-Tuesday schedule continues. And we'll recap both of those next Thursday, Coach. We always appreciate the time.
Hey, we'll see you guys all on Saturday night.
You got it. Thank you, Coach. Go Rockets indeed. How about that? The Rockets are indeed rolling. Rockets rolling, rock and roll. Never mind. 7 out of 8, looking for 8 out of 9. And that followed a tough 2-game stretch in which they lost to Marshall and Wright State. So Coach Kowalczyk certainly has the Rockets going, clicking on all cylinders now, if you will. And that is going to do it for us. It's all the time that we've got for you on the extravaganza for this Thursday. Guess what's coming your way next? I'll give you 3 guesses. The first 2 don't count. It's drive time. Now ask me who's hosting it. I'll give you 3 guesses. You won't get that one. Jim Cushman is in for Mike Miller tonight on Drive Time. So stay where you are. Keep listening to ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. And don't forget, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, it's a free-for-all Friday. Anything we've talked about in sports this week, plus a look ahead to the conference championship games and the right to go to the Super Bowl in the NFL. We'll talk about all of that tomorrow right here on the Extravaganza. Have yourself a great night. Bye-bye.